Now begin Be'ezras Hashem, part 11 on our series on Bitachon. We're learning Chavos Havolos, Shara Bitachon, we're in the middle of Perek Gimel, and last week we began.
Rav, maybe you want to open your door.
A subject of Hishtadlus. And where does the issue of Hishtadlus fit in with our Chiyuv of Bitachon? So the Chavos Havolos taught us that one has to do Hishtadlus. Hashtadlus is the Rotzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the reason is for two reasons. It's true, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could so easily have created a world in which it would not be necessary to do Hishtadlus at all. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have just rained Paranosta down Min HaShomayim, as he did in the Midbar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created us in a way that we wouldn't need to eat. Moshe Rabbeinu, 40 days on Har Sinai with Shomayim. Lechem lo yochalti, mayim lo yishosisi. So clearly, Hishtadlus is not a necessity, as it were, because there couldn't be another way. Rather, the Chavos Havolos explained the reason why a person has to do Hishtadlus in this world is for one of two reasons. Number one, to act as a test. Will the person do Hishtadlus in a halachically permissible way, at the right time, in the right manner? Every form of Hishtadlus can be a test. And if it's done correctly, it will earn reward, and if it's done incorrectly, it will deserve punishment. That's the first reason why a person has to do Hishtadlus. It's a test. Every day, one goes to the office. Any money that is earned outside of the office, any type of Hishtadlus, it's a test. The other reason the Chavos Havolos explained to us is because if a person would not do Hishtadlus and life would be too easy, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would literally rain down Paranosta upon him, Min HaShemayim, then when the going is too easy, there exists a chashash that a person will reject and rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He forgets that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all. When life is too good, as the Pasuk writes, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivot. Vayivot means to kick. When the going is not so smooth, then to the contrary, that's when we come back to the Rabbeinu Shalom. So that's another reason why a person has to do Hishtadlus. In order that he should forever be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he should not be boyet. You should not kick, as it were, kaviyotel against the Rebbeinu Shalom. Those are the two reasons. Says the Chavos Havolos, this l'chayra, therefore, ends up with the inescapable conclusion that if it will be somebody for whom these two reasons do not apply, neither does he need a test, nor is there any concern that he will chas v'shalom rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then indeed it's absolutely not necessary for him to do Hishtadlus at all. That must be the simple mathematical equation. If there are two reasons for necessitating Hishtadlus, if they don't apply, then necessity to do Hishtadlus does not apply. And who does this refer to? The Chavos Havolos says, this refers us, of course, to the Tzaddik. The Tzaddik does not need that test. The tzaddik also runs no concern, no chashash that he's going to reject the Rebbeinu Shalom. And therefore, according to this equation, it should indeed be unnecessary whatsoever for a tzaddik to have to do any Hishtadlus at all. With the obvious question, and this is the way we left off, is that we don't necessarily see that borne out. Because we see plenty of tzaddikim who seem to have a very, very rough time. And life is not so easy for them. And they have to do maximum Hishtadlus, as much, or perhaps even more sometimes than others. And that does not seem to fit in with the equation and the explanation of the Chavos Havolos. For what purpose must they do Hishtadlus? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring different Yisurim to a tzaddik whether it's Ishtadlus for Parnasa, Ishtadlus for Refuah, Ishtadlus for Ruchnias, the Gashnias. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that to the Tzaddik? For what purpose? Surely, the reasons stated for ever necessitating Ishtadlus simply do not apply to the Tzaddik. This is the question that the Chelos of Ovis asked at the conclusion of his explanation that we mentioned last time. Says the Chelos of Ovis, the question is an excellent question. In fact, it's probably the oldest theological and philosophical question that we know. And of course, this is the question that termed as, why is there tzaddik v'ra aloi? Or at least what seems to be ra aloi. The opposite side of the coin, why is there rosha v'toivloi? The oldest question in the book, v'chi mipnei ma yesh tzaddik v'ra aloi rosha v'toivloi. But of course, this question now has extra meaning in light of the Chelos of Ovis. Traditionally, one understands that this question, why would there be tzaddik v'ra aloi, the question simply is, it doesn't seem to be fair. It's just unfair. That would seem to be the shaila. But in light of the Chelos of Ovis, we have a deeper meaning in this question. It's not just an issue of being fair or not fair, but rather it would seem to be totally unnecessary. The whole purpose of bringing Ra, as it were, quote-unquote, to a tzaddik, to necessitate his shtadlus, to bring about the refuah, to bring about parnasa, whatever it may be, all of that seems totally unnecessary. After all, his shtadlus is only necessary based on the two reasons we stated before, neither of which apply to a tzaddik. So why indeed do we see on occasion tzaddik v'ra aloi? Says the Chelos of Ovis, this is an old question. This question was asked first, perhaps, by Moshe Rabbeinu. After the Chet of Yegel, if you look in Parashas Ki Tiso, those rather cryptic looking psukim, Hoydieni no es derochecho, teach me your ways, asked Moshe Rabbeinu of the Rabbeinu Shemaylam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered, the way the Gemara in Brachos explained that what in fact was the question was precisely this, show me your ways. The ways are not always understandable, the Derech HaMakadosh Baruch Hu, sometimes the Tzadik Virali. It's a Pasuk in Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah Anovi asked the same question, Madua Derech Rishoim Solecha, Solecha from the word Hatzlacha. Why is it that Rishoyim have Hatzlacha? And so on and so forth. This is a question that has been asked repeatedly over the ages by the Nevi'im, by Moshe Rabbeinu, and others. Says the Chelos of Ovis, you will notice that this question is never answered. The question is always posed. The question does not seem, on the surface, to have an answer. And above all, says the Chelos of Ovis, the reason for this is because there is no single answer to this question. There is no one-size-fits-all to answer this question. Of course, the question does have an answer. It must have an answer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Toiv Lashem Lakoil. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does only good. Kolman the Ovid Rachmona Letav Ovid. So there must be an answer to this question. But because there is no single solitary answer, that, says the Chelos of Ovis, is indeed why the question is invariably unanswered. Both in the case of Tzaddik v'ra aloi and also Rosha v'toiv loi. And he brings the famous pasuk. The pasuk says towards the end of the Torah, "Hanistoreis l'Hashem Elokim." There are those things that must remain concealed, and they are to be understood only by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, if you look in the Gemara that we mentioned before, when Moshe Rabbeinu asked of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, Why is there indeed Tzadik Baraloi and Rosh HaVatoivloi? If you look at the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered Moshe Rabbeinu, V'yesh Oimrim, and some say HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not answer Moshe Rabbeinu. So did he or didn't he? Says Rav Shimshon Lefal Hirsch, both opinions are correct. In fact, he answered that I can't answer. Those two opinions are in fact not arguing on each other. So what does this mean, at least on a simple level? We'll soon see the Chodesh HaBavos does address the question. But there is a puzzle. In that very parasha that we mentioned before in Parashat Kisita, where Moshe Rabbeinu poses the question, that difficult question of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Hoidieni Noes Drochecha, show me your ways, teach me, explain to me the Derech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as the Gemara explained, why is there Rosh HaVatoivloi Tzadik Baraloi? And the Pasuk very cryptically says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, V'ra'isa es achoirai. The Pasuk says, V'ra'isa es achoirai uponai lo yeiro. Literally translated, you will see the back of me, you will not see my face. V'nitzavto iti, you will stand with me, al mokrim hatsor. All seems very vague. What exactly was HaKadosh Baruch Hu answering? You will see the back of me, not the face. What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's answer? So the Chasam Sofer in Parshas Ki Sisa explains that sometimes events unfold and they don't seem to be understandable at the time. But after the event, the next day, or the next week, or the next year, or 100 years later, when you look back with the benefit of hindsight, then everything does seem to make sense. We didn't understand it head on. And that's what it means. You cannot see my face, face to face. You cannot understand the drachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but v'ra'isa et achoirai. Afterwards, that's what it means behind. When all the events are behind you, after the event, you see the picture in its entirety, then and only then can it be understood. Of course, there are so many mashalim for this, but the mashal that the Chasam Sofer himself demonstrates with is, of course, the Purim story. There is no greater example of events that didn't seem to make sense. Where was HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Look through the whole Megillat Esther, you will not find HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name mentioned once. And yet we all know when we get to the end of the story, we can look back and read every single detail and see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every nook and cranny. So that was a classic example of, you cannot see HaKadosh Baruch Hu face on. What's this whole thing with Vashti? Why Haman? Why is Big Son and Seresh important? Why the Gzeira, Esther, etc., etc.? But V'ra'isa et achoirai, with the benefit of hindsight, you see that every single detail makes sense in its right time and in its right place. In fact, the Mishnah tells us about the Megillah, HaKoirei L'mafreya Lo Yotso. If you read the Megillah backwards, you are not Yotze. Do you know why? Because the story has to be told in that particular fashion, from beginning to end, precisely in a way that it doesn't seem to make sense at the time, but it does afterwards. There is a very famous moshel, and like I said, everybody really could perhaps think of their own moshel, but there's a wonderful, wonderful moshel of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Shlomo Kluger, who lived 200 years ago, 250 years ago or so, and he came to answer the following question. When the great Tana of Akiva was being killed in a very torturous and cruel manner, Chazal tell us that the malachim, the angels, came to complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they said, Zu Taira, the Zu Tzchara, is this Taira and this is the reward? Which is, of course, another way of asking, why is there Tzadik Virali? Rabbi Akiva, whom Chazal say to an extent was greater than Moshe Rabbeinu to be killed like that. Zu Taira, the Zu Tzchara. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer? Silence, he said to the Malachim. One more word, and I will return the world to Tohu Vavohu. Emptiness, darkness, like it was right at the beginning of creation. And everybody asks the obvious question. The Malachim asked a perfectly valid Shaila, Lechoira, Zu Taira, Zu Tzchara. So what did the Rabbeinu Shalala mean when he answers silence? And if there's another word, I'll ruin the world? How does that answer the question at all? So Rabbi Shlomo Kluger said the phenomenal moshel of the king who requests of the top tailor in his kingdom, I want you to produce for me the master cloak, the cloak of all cloaks, and I give you free rein to the royal treasury. You can take gold, you can take silver, you can take diamonds, you can take whatever you like. Just produce the most magnificent cloak that's ever been seen in my kingdom. After 6 months of hard work, day by day, the cloak is indeed ready, and as promised, the most magnificent cloak, studded with gold, silver, diamonds, zav, kesef, and nechoshet. And the king is indeed thrilled with his tailor's work. Until somebody whispers in the ear of the king that I think this tailor cheated you. Because you relied on him implicitly, and you gave him free rein of the royal treasury, and I don't think that everything has been accounted for. In fact, I think he took materials from the treasury and did not put them into the coat. They're sitting in his back pocket or in his bank account. And the king is, of course, furious. How could you have breached my trust and misappropriated the funds that were allocated to you? And he calls in a tailor, and that's it. Achas, domoi, dosoi, lahomis. Off with your head. And the tailor implores, he begs the king and says, what do you mean? You trusted me, I did not breach that trust. I wrote down, I've recorded every single piece of gold and diamond and silver, and it's all here in the coat. Not a single item was taken without being put into this coat. And the king said, I'm sorry, I don't believe you. I've been told otherwise. And unless you can prove your innocence, I'm afraid you're going to have to be executed. And the tailor said to the king, I can prove my innocence, but it will be a terrible shame. He says, what do you mean? He says, the only way I can prove my innocence is to strip apart the coat, lay it out thread by thread, diamond by diamond, gold by gold, have it all lined up, and you'll see from beginning to end, every material that was taken is right there. But if the coat is not stripped apart, and it's there as one homogeneous unit, of course, we cannot count how many threads there are there, and how many diamonds, and how many stones. But if I strip it apart from beginning to end, lay it all out in front of you, I'm happy to do so. But then you have no coat. The choice is yours. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was answering the Malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not evading the question. When he said to the Malachim, they asked him, Zu Taira, Zu Tzchara, and he said, not another word, because otherwise I'd have to return the world to Tohu Vavohu. What does that mean, Tohu Vavohu? Back to day one of Briat Ha'olam. Not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling them that he'll ruin the world, but rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling them, I'll have to return the world to day one. You have to rewind the video and see the whole picture thread by thread, diamond by diamond. And if you have the whole picture open in front of you, and you see from beginning to end, the whole world from day one until the very last day, the picture unraveled in front of you, then and only then can you understand. So this is not an evasion of the question. Rather, you are incapable of understanding the answer because you are not privy to the whole picture. And like I said, everybody can think of their own mashal. Somebody just last week told me the mashal of looking through the keyhole and all you can see is a baby being jabbed and screaming and yelling. What tremendous achzorias, how cruel can this be? And of course, until you open the door and you see that he's being vaccinated, and actually it's an act of rachamim v'chesed. But if you don't see the picture and you see your little vision through the keyhole, you don't have the complete picture. That's v'reicha, v'reisto es achoyrai. So that essentially is really the answer. And that's what Rav Shimshon Paul Hirsch was telling, explains, or Kodesh Baruch Hu says, the answer is that there is no answer. Not that there's no answer that exists, but no answer that you're capable of appreciating. And that's why, invariably, the Nevi'im, although having posed the question of why is there Tzadik V'Ra'aloi, but invariably did not answer it. Not because they didn't have the answer. Bahamistores Lashem Elohim. Having said all of that, despite this introduction, which is of course very sadistic and fundamental, having said all of that, the Chiddush Avodah says, the Imkol there. Having said all of that, I will nonetheless suggest various different approaches to answer both sides of the coin. How can it be Tzadik V'Ra'aloi? How can it be Rasha V'Toivloi? And again, we are answering the question in specific light of what the Chiddush Avodah has just taught us. The only reason that we have difficulties and we have to invest effort and energy doing Hishtadlus rather than just having an easy, cushy life was for the two reasons we mentioned before, either to act as a Nisoyan or that we shouldn't be Boyet B'Toyev, but both of those do not apply to a Tzadik. That lends extra meaning and extra understanding, extra depth to this question of why is there Tzadik V'Ra'aloi? Not just merely a question of it seems to be unfair, but rather the Ra seems to be unnecessary. So the Chiddush Avodah says that I can suggest you various answers. One may well be, and there are a number of sources that back this up, that the tzaddik, although he's a tzaddik now, but he may have been over an avera, for example, at an earlier stage in his life. So in order that he shouldn't have to suffer Gehenna, ba'olam haba, HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays him off comparatively likely here ba'olam hazeh, and those are those yisurim of Tzadik V'Ra'aloi. The Ra, quote unquote, is merely a punishment for an avera that was done at an earlier stage. An alternative suggestion, says the Chiddush Avodah, would be that on occasion HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides b'roiv chochmosai not as a result of an avera, but purely for the sake of increasing the tzaddik's olam haba. The more difficult the life was, lefum saro agrom. Lefum saro agrom. The harder the life, the more the reward. Such that, on occasion, a hard life is actually the greatest chesed. Because one, if it could be olmed b'nisayin, lefum saro agrom, you will inevitably then have earned himself greater olam haba. The Chiddush Avodah says another reason may be true as well, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu might well send yisurim and difficulties to a tzaddik not as an earlier punishment for an early avera, not for the sake necessarily of increasing his olam haba, but rather to be a lesson to others. Look how a tzaddik deals with yisurim. So that should be an inspiration. a humbling inspiration to all those who are privy, all those who see the tzaddik suffer and yet not be deterred from his avodas Hashem. That's a lesson to all those around him. So that could be another explanation. A similar theme, says the famous Avodas, might well be that the Rosha might, for example, have a taina. Who says this person is so great? Remember, the Yetzirah, the Satan, complains to the Rebbeinu Shalom, who says Avraham Avinu is so great? So he gave him this genus and he passed them one by one. And that then silences the enemy. On occasion, the Chedus of Avraham says it may well be that the tzaddik is indeed a perfect tzaddik. The problem was, he didn't take responsibility for those around him. He didn't rebuke those around him. And in his position of being a tzaddik or a leader, he had extra responsibility. So yes, on the surface it seems to be undeserved. He's a tzaddik, so why is it ra aloi? That may well be the explanation. The other side of the coin, says the Chodesh of others, also has plenty of answers. Why is there Rasha v'toivrei? How can it be that a Rasha has an easy, cushy life? Again, it's not just a question of, is this fair or unfair, but rather, doesn't the person have to do ishtavlus? The person has to have difficulties in order for it to be a nesoyin, in order that he shouldn't be boyed v'toiv. So how can the Rasha go through life on cruise control? How can that be? So the Chedus Avoda says, again, there are plenty of explanations that I can suggest for this also. First and foremost, the opposite of what we said before, he may have done a mitzvah or two at an earlier stage in his life, and once again, rather than granting him Gan Eden, Nitzchius and Olam Haba, so he's paid off, as it were, b'olam hazeh, with a relatively cushy life. An alternative might well be, says the Chodesh Avodas, but in fact, he has an easy life. His bank account is mounting by the day. He doesn't himself realize that in fact that's all he is, the holder of a bank account, because it's all for the purpose of being passed on to others. And this is absolutely in Yonah D'Yema. Because in Parashas Boy, this week's parasha, right at the beginning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, look what will now happen to the Mitzrayim, Eis Hashem, Hist'alalti b'Mitzrayim. What does this word mean, Hist'alalti? Hist'alalti is translated, Rashi explains, a lashon of mocking. The Mitzrayim have been mocked. In which way? Once again, we turn to the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer says, we must appreciate that at the time, Mitzrayim were the world economic superpower. The richest country, they had an endless, unlimited supply of water, and therefore of produce. They were the undisputed world economy leaders. For years and years and years, wealth was amassed, and in an instant, in Parashas Boy, Vayenatzlu es Mitzrayim, it was wiped out clean by Klal Yisrael. This was all predestined, this was all pre-promised. Says the Chasam Sofer, that is the mocking. You are accruing wealth and you didn't yourselves realize that you're just holding it for other people, namely for Klal Yisrael. You know, the moshel, I sometimes think to myself, imagine Reuven walking down the street, he's holding two enormous bags full of gold coins. He meets his friend Shimon and he says, Shimon, here, see this bag of gold coins? Take it. Shimon cannot believe his luck. He says, are you being serious? Absolutely serious. He says, one second, we're not done yet. See this other bag in my left hand? I want you to take that as well. Shimon cannot believe his luck. He's now holding these two enormous bags of gold coins. He's planning how many homes he's going to buy, that dream yacht, the vacation. It's all going through his mind, and he notices Reuben just bends down to tie up his shoelaces, and then says to Shimon, can I have the bags back please now? I only wanted you to hold them as I tied my shoelaces. That is the ultimate Esa Shehit Alalti. That's why you gave me the money. I thought I was wealthy, I thought I was rich, I thought I'd made the big time. I didn't realize I was just holding it for you temporarily. Mitzrayim were holding the money temporarily on behalf of Klal Yisrael. They themselves didn't realize it. So yes, on the surface it looks like Rosh HaVetayvloi. No, they're just a bank. They don't own a penny. They're just holding it for others. Sometimes it may be a Rosh is holding it for a child of his who does deserve it. Or for others. And in fact, the Chodesh Avodah says it could well be for a different reason completely, and we have discussed this in the past. Rosh HaVetayvloi, it may seem to be tayv, but wealth, for example, is not always a blessing. And he quotes, of course, the famous pasuk in Kehelet, Oysher, richness and wealth can sometimes be shomur leba'alov leroosoy. It can sometimes be his undoing. And of course the greatest example is in fact when the Gemara tells us that was Korach's undoing. Korach was very wealthy, fabulously wealthy, but that was his undoing. The Gemara says in Brachos, because Klal Yisrael was too wealthy, that precipitated the chet ha'egel. So it turns out it actually wasn't toiv after all. There could be a situation in which, says the Chodesh Avodah, the Rosha is zoicha to wealth based on zchus avos, not as a result of a mitzvah that he personally did, but in a previous doir or doirite. And finally, says the Chodesh Avodah, a sixth explanation, that itself could be a test. When people see that indeed there is Rosh HaVetayvloi, how does one react? Does one indeed ask questions of faith and turn around and reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'Tayrosoi because things don't seem to make sense? Or do we understand that on occasions we just don't understand? Because v'ro'isto es achoirei. That itself could be a purpose in itself of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought this toiv to a Russia, to be a test for others. Indeed, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Why is this person who's a Russia seems to have an easy life, and yet those who are bigger tzaddikim don't seem to have an easy life? So there are two approaches. There's the approach of those who say, indeed, it doesn't make sense, and because that, I hereby reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But those who are Oymed Ben Yisrael, they're the ones who have grown as a result of these trying situations. We can never judge, because we weren't there. But I once asked an Odom Godel, all those people who left the fold tragically after the Holocaust, and they said, we simply saw too much, and there's too many unanswered questions. We certainly can't judge them, because we have no idea how we would have reacted had we been there at the time. But I once asked an Odom Godel, does it at the end of the day, however, reflect the lack of emuna on their part? And he said, absolutely it does. Again, we can't judge, because who's to say we're any stronger in our emunah, in our bitach? But yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts somebody in a situation, however difficult, but we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the kelim together with it, that one can deal with that nisayon. And even if one has to go through death camps in Nazi Germany, that's supposed to be a Nisoyan as well. That may well be a Nisoyan of Rosha V'Toivloi, and on the other hand, Tzadik V'Rali. So it doesn't seem to make sense. It's true. And there were some people who thought that way, and they left Yiddishkeit forever, tragically. But there were some who didn't see it that way. And when they were asked, where was HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Auschwitz? And they answered, he was right there in every nook and cranny. We perhaps didn't understand. Moshe Rabbeinu also didn't understand. But we didn't reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We went left and we rebuilt our lives, and our thousands and many of us, and for me it's very humbling, I myself am a descendant of Holocaust survivors who did not reject the faith. We know that we and our families are here in the zechus of those who may well have asked the question, how can it be Tzadik V'Ra'aloi and Rosh V'Toivloi? But they didn't let that question bother their Yiddishkeit. To the contrary, some of them strengthened it as a result. And it's a very, very humbling thought. But this is what the Chiddush HaVavos is teaching us. Tzadik V'Ra'aloi, Rosh V'Toivloi, it's true, doesn't fit in with the regular, quote-unquote, rules of the Bria, as laid down for us by the Chiddush HaVavos. And the question is asked, and the question has answers. We don't always understand those questions. We don't understand the answers. The Chiddush HaVavos has just given us almost a dozen different suggestions. So Be'ezus Hashem, next week, we will continue as the Chiddush HaVavos now brings back the discussion, the practical discussion, of how does our Chiyuv of Bitochin and our Chiyuv of Hishtadlus, how are those two things balanced? Be'ezus Hashem, we will see that next week.